Shabbat Shalom, everyone. The Father is good to us, amen? All the time. We're so thankful for the Father. And I could tell you, any time that you receive a confirmation throughout your week on a direction that you may have been looking at, it feels so good. So good. And I'm referring to the Wednesday night Bible study. Because I didn't have any expectations or knowing that it would be speaking about servanthood, being a good and trustworthy servant. Echbad. And there's so much. There's so much of what we're looking at in Vayigash, the Torah portion that we're in and been breaking it down step by step, that speaks very highly on what it's required of us to be able to draw near. And it literally starts off with Yehuda drawing near to Yosef and being able to experience the favor of the Father on his life. And I'm just so thankful for these examples because they've been nothing but an encouragement to each and every one of us. And I was trying to maintain myself Wednesday night Bible study because of the topics at hand. Because I was like, yeah, I'm definitely loaded down with some notes and definitely been in this direction about being a servant. We're thankful for any confirmation and anything that shows that we're on the right track line on where the Father wants to take us and what he wants us to see. But I can't help express how much of a blessing seeing his favor in the way that we've been seeing it has been on my life and the significance of five and the importance of what we've been looking at in the text. But before we jump into Genesis 47, I was taking my time throughout this week and asking the Father, how much can I experience of your understanding of what it means to truly be that good and trustworthy servant? Because like I said, we saw how it began with Yehuda. Now we're dealing with five excellent pick choices that the Father commanded through Yosef to bring before Pharaoh. A servant has to know their approach. We know that we can't approach the Father any kind of way that we want. That we have to have an example. We have to have someone that's willing to go forth, someone that's willing to suffer on our behalf, so that way we know how to approach Almighty Yah. And we're thankful for that because honestly, we couldn't do it on our own. There's been plenty of times I'm sure we tried to do things our own way, and it definitely did not end up the way that we were hoping for. That's why we need an example. That's why we have all these wonderful examples that always point to the perfect example, Christ Yeshua, the one that we absolutely need in our lives to lead us. But as a servant, we got to deal with posture. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 22, verse 29. Now, usually we have some kind of like direct Hebrew word tie-in or some kind of link, and I'm sure there might be somewhere in there, but it's more so of the principle of what we're dealing with. And it says, do you see a man who is skilled in his work? He does stand before sovereigns. He does not stand before obscure ones. An important word in there is skilled, that mahir, to be quick, skillful. And when you break it down further, it really paints a good picture for us. And it says, and its parent root, which is the mem and the resh, the concrete is bitter and the abstract is weak. The pictograph of mem is a picture of water and the resh is a picture of a head. Combined, these mean waterhead or headwaters. And no, I'm not name calling. It's just giving us a direct image of what it is whenever you break this word further down. Because it's directly dealing with the masculine section B. And you notice it adds the he and the yod. It's to deal with hands, to deal with an arm that reaches out and helps you. And it says to be ready in the sense of being quick. In our service to the Father, we have to always be willing and ready to be quick to respond to whatever it is that He needs us to respond to. Because in reality, we come from a position of being stuck in the mud. Stuck in the marsh. Because whenever I go over these things, I have to share significant experiences that I personally had to help relate to it. Because without the hay and without the yod, the arm, but you got those two representations of help, because we need help, we're just left like a waterhead, weighed down, stuck in the mud, because we need quick help whenever we begin to sing. I remember a time, this fella here, look, I might have been born and raised in southern Louisiana, but I was born and raised by people that tend towards more of the northern lifestyle. And that's okay. That's just a different element. Maybe that's why I do so well in the cold, because the AC was on all the time. But when you get out there, you definitely need someone that knows how to help you quickly, especially whenever you're playing with Nutri-Rats. And you weigh 250 pounds. You need to be mindful and quick and listen to instructions, because the buddy I was with, he told me, he's like, all right, Rob, we gotta get that rat we just shot. I didn't know, it doesn't look too firm. Nah, it's all right, we got it. I'm gonna get out and get it, I'm gonna grab it. There's no problem, that's $6, buddy. We got this. You get out, and then you experience what we're talking about in real time. Because it looks solid, it looks firm, it looks nice to stand on, but looks can be deceiving. And you take that step out, didn't listen to the instructions, and then you sank, and then you stuck. And thankfully, you only stuck to your knees, so it's just enough to make sure you be able to get help to get out of the situation that you get yourself into. Now, honestly, how many times can we say that because we stepped out and wasn't following instructions, we got ourselves in positions to where we might be a little stuck? And being thankful that there was a quick hand to help you out of the situation you got stuck in. Then on top of that, a little extra funny about the story is thankfully we had my stepson Logan with us, because he was a prime example of what it looks like to almost walk on water. He was so light that he could just walk on the mud right past me while I was stuck and grab the rat and get back in the boat. But you can learn real quick that you need people that are equipped to be able to help you out of the situations you get yourself stuck into. We need the hand. We need the arm. But I thought that'd be a nice opening going into 47. We're going to start with verse 1, going down to verse 4. But I believe that the Father put that in my heart in regards to just remembering the fact that the brothers in their current situation, they almost to that finish line. They almost dare to collect the prize that's been waiting for them because of the favor of the Father. And to be able to inherit Goshen, another representation of drawing near to the Father, to help them in the 7 years of famine that they're dealing with. Because otherwise, if they don't rely on the arm and the hand, they're just going to be stuck the entire time. I wouldn't ever want to imagine what it would be like to be stuck out there with no help. Especially if you, in all honesty, I'm not a prideful person, especially if you don't know what you're doing. Because it just wasn't my cup of tea when I was growing up. But thankfully, the Father knows that we're going to need that help in the times that He knows we're going to end up stuck. And He's getting them out of this situation every step of the way. But the most important thing is to be able to follow those instructions all the way through and through. And that's all He requires of us is obedience. Genesis 47, verse 1. Then Joseph went and spoke to Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brothers, their flocks and their herds and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan, and see, they are in the land of Goshen." He took 5 men from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What is your occupation?" And they say to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds. Both we and also our fathers. And they said to Pharaoh, we have come to dwell in the land because there is no pasture for your servants' flocks. For the scarcity of food is severe in the land of Canaan. And now, please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen. Something that I found absolutely amazing about that chapter is servants is mentioned 5 times. And I thought that was pretty significant and important in regards to the fact that we're dealing with the Father's favor, His grace. And then it's also highlighting the importance of what a servant is. Because we could self-proclaim something, we can walk and go through the motions of life, and we can honestly end up just treating serving the Father as like it's some mundane 9-to-5. But He's always going to test our hearts to make sure that we have a heart of a good and trustworthy servant. And we could see that happening in real time in their lives. But in reference to the time servants mentioned, the 3 times is in regards to the children of Israel, and there's 2 times that's in regards to the Mishraites. And as we got to be able to see within the model, just like Yosef, just like Yeshua, He was sent to save the world, the entire world. But dealing with servant, it's H5650, and it's Echbed in the Hebrew. It means a servant, a bondman, a servant. The ancient Hebrew is the ayin, the bait, and the dalet. Its action is a serve, its concrete is a servant, and the abstract is service. A work performed or made for another out of obligation, requirement, or gratitude. And it's in the masculine form, servant. Very straightforward. But what I found to be a blessing is looking at the deeper meanings and the deeper parts of what's being spelt out for us, that ayin, bait, and dalet. Because the ayin is the eye. It deals with watching, to experience something. The bait is a house, family, to represent inside. And the dalet is a door to move an entrance. It's all dealing with a servant. And I thought this was awesome because whenever Brother Chad brought up a good and trustworthy servant, it's like this goes right into where we're at. Because that watch, in regards to this, the Ebed, a good and trustworthy servant that watchful waits by the house door with gratitude. Now with that, it's one of the moments, I am sweating bullets right now. I could probably open up an ammunition store. There we go. I've been heating up all day. But with that being said, the Father deals with me in this special way, and when I'm meditating on different things and just spending time with Him and meditating on where I'm at. Because like I said, like the Word says, we can't just serve the Father in any which way we think is right. There's a way that He instructs us to serve. And instantly in my mind, I pictured 2 different servants. And one of them is probably going to sound familiar to everybody. But what came to mind was how we answer to the door matters. Because that's what servants do. They put themselves in a position ready to do whatever the house needs it, so that way the service can continue. And then, of course, I picture a certain servant that if we try and fake it to make it, if we try and put ourselves in a position to where we look like a servant, but we might scare you know, who knows what out of people when you answer the door, it's all about posture and how you present yourself. Could you imagine getting introduced to the door and then all you hear is, you rang. Because when that picture came across my mind, I was like, yeah, maybe sometimes we don't realize it, but we might be like Lurch whenever we approach the door because we're too busy and caught up with dealing with our own problems. Well, the realization is the Father wants us to get out of the mud. We have to have His hand, His arm. And then what's required of us is to make sure that we're in a position to be able to serve others. Because we see this directly happening within the Torah portion. A lot of times, it's always reflective of others serving others for the benefit of everyone. But dealing with the door and being a servant, I was reminded of John chapter 10. And doorkeepers. John chapter 10, verse 1 says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter through the door into the sheepfold, but climbs up by another way, that one is a thief and a robber. But he who enters through the door is the shepherd of the sheep. The doorkeeper opens for him, and the sheep hear his voice. And he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." And you know, I took a moment and really thought about that doorkeeper. And I thought about, because we know within this chapter, Yeshua says plainly, "I am the door. I am the shepherd." He refers himself to these things, but then I was thinking about the doorkeeper. Then I was thinking, just like Yosef introducing his family to Pharaoh in a certain way, in a certain manner, in a certain good and faithful servant, he was able to reflect that character and make a good impression. So then it made me begin to reflect, as a doorkeeper, whenever someone is looking for salvation, looking for a chance to get to know the Good Shepherd, to be introduced into the house through the door, because there's only one way into the house, am I being that good doorkeeper? You know, I had someone at work right before we had our wonderful time off that we've been enjoying. We're looking forward to getting back to it Monday and then Tuesday, and then we get the rest of the week off again. Praise Yah. I'm thankful for that. But before we left, he walked up to me and he goes, "This is so random, but I'm thankful." He goes, "Man, I need to get saved." It's just like, you know, sometimes you can go to work, and all work is sometimes to you is just work. You ministering, you walk in and out. But there's people there that are watching you. They're watching your service. They watch how you conduct yourselves. They watch closely. And then you develop that sense of being that good servant, and people pick up on that. But he just, boom, out the blue, said, "I need to get saved. I want to go to your church." I gave him the information. I gave him the address. And I told him, it doesn't only have to just be that, but if you need us to come to you, Bible study, whatever it is, you let me know you have my information. And it's those moments that I look forward to the absolute most. Because no, I am not the most charismatic person. I can be goofy, a little here and there. I could be this, I could be that. But I'm no longer hard on myself because I know who I am in the Father. Amen. If He trusts me, then I should be able to trust myself, no matter what anyone says. And that goes for any of us. Sometimes we get so caught up in our faults that we overlook the importance of grace and what it is that the Father sees in each and every one of us. And I think that's absolutely amazing that He's so good to us. But we have to always be ready and quick to be a service, to introduce people to the door. Because He's the only one that has gotten us out of the mess that we once were in. But John 10, verse 3, the doorkeeper opens for him. Remember when we open the door? We shouldn't scare anybody when we open the door to Yeshua, to others. And the sheep hear His voice, and He calls His own sheep by name and leads them out. And when He has brought out His own sheep, He goes before them, and the sheep follow Him because they know His voice. And I can't help but just to point out the simplicity of the fact that it was so important that the brothers knew the voice of the Father through Yosef. Because at any given moment in this transaction, in this moment that they're speaking with Pharaoh, if they put themselves instead of what Yosef instructed them to do, they can completely ruin the entire chance of being able to be in Goshen, to be able to have that draw near experience in the middle of a famine. And that's how careful we need to be with our words, to make sure that we're representing the Master well. And they shall by no means, verse 5, follow a stranger, but shall flee from him, because they do not know the voice of strangers. Yeshua used this figure of speech, but they did not know what he had been saying to them. Yeshua therefore said to them again, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. Whoever enters through me, he shall be saved, and shall go in and shall go out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to slaughter and to destroy. I have come that they might possess life and that they might possess it beyond measure." That's where we're going to stop in John 10. But I have five examples of our obligations to our Master. Five examples, practical examples, just straightforward to the point. Because I want to expound more on servant. Because we remember, obligation, requirement, and gratitude. And I was really pressed to look at obligation. Because sometimes you can look at obligation in a negative sense. Because when we treat things as an obligation, we sometimes just see it as, well, we just got to do it because we're supposed to do it, and that's it. But part of that said requirement, gratitude. We have to have that gratitude. That's what he's really looking for. You can do all the things right. You can treat the Torah as a checklist. You can keep all the Sabbaths. You can keep all the high Sabbaths. You can keep whatever it may be. But what is going on in your heart, the Father is testing that. Because he's watching how we greet people at the door, how we treat people. I know a lot of times at my place of employment, because that's where I get a lot of ministry opportunity to introduce, the opportunity to share my love for the Messiah with others. When I take those moments, I have to take them with everything in me with gratitude, because I so badly want them to experience what I experienced in my personal life. Because look, that was a cute little analogy about being stuck in some marshy water. But when we really think about what we were stuck in, it was terrible. It was awful. We got to be so thankful with gratitude to be able to serve the one that allows us to introduce others to the door. The five examples of our obligations to our Master. A servant of Yeshua lives under Yeshua's authority in every area of life. So obligations, or concrete patterns of obedience, service, humility, and set-apartness that flow from belonging to Him. These are not the ways to earn salvation, but ways a redeemed servant actually lives out faith. We know that there's nothing under the sun that we can do to obtain salvation, because salvation was given to us freely. It's part of that favor, that grace. We did not deserve it, but the Father saw fit for us to have an opportunity after, despite everything, to be able to obtain it. But there's things that's always required for us to do. Number one is daily obedience to His word. Scripture constantly ties love for Yeshua to keeping His commands. Guard regular time in Scripture with the intent to obey, not just to learn, for example, but like reading John 14 and then deliberately practicing what Yeshua commands that day. And we know what John 14 mentions. If you love me, you'll obey my commands. Mm-hmm. It says also, treat every clear biblical command like forgiveness, sexual purity, honesty, generosity, as non-negotiable instructions from a master, not suggestions you can weigh out. And the reality is, there's a lot of times we try and justify whatever it is that we're being tempted to do. That's called weighing it out. We're trying to decide within ourselves, well, I know it says this, but I'm currently really dealing with this. And it could be something that, I'll use the forgiveness as an example. It's not just required of us to give forgiveness, but also to receive it. Because if we deny someone the access of being able to be forgiven, then guess what? Whatever measure you measure out will be measured back. And that's just that's the hard reality of that truth. And we can see that being primarily an example within the Torah. Sometimes I allow myself to be caught up with the outside noise about certain things. But literally the way I see it is, if there was not forgiveness implemented within the moments that Yehuda drew near, and then throughout all the testing, and then proving themselves in a forgiven state, then it would be for nothing. Imagine if Yosef just decided upon himself, yeah, I knew I was right. Shoo. Get out. Good luck. He wouldn't even be written in the scriptures, because that's not a primary example. And we have to ask and test ourselves that if we are ever wronged, are we going to get on a high horse and get prideful and not accept an apology? Because usually I just look at it from the one perspective, right? We just look at it from that one-sidedness as, I have to ask for forgiveness. But we also have to be willing to receive forgiveness. And it applies to all the principles. Because whatever measure we measure out, it will be measured by the Father. Number two, serving others like Yeshua. Yeshua came not to be served, but to serve. And his followers are called to the same servant posture. Look for low, unnoticed tasks like cleaning, visiting the overlooked, practical help, and take them without needing credit, much like Yeshua washing the disciples' feet. But use your spiritual gift specifically to serve one another, seeing every church responsibility and act of kindness as service rendered directly to our master. And I can't help, but that's a lot of what was also being said Wednesday night. I've been having these different things in my notes for close to 2 weeks now. So whenever Wednesday night came rolling around, and I'm again, so thankful and appreciative of that fellowship. The food was amazing. The conversations were amazing. And just to hear everyone speak, it's always a blessing. It is. It's always a blessing. But that specific thing that we just looked at within the obligation section really, really points out how important it is for us not to be people pleasers. Because whenever we do things, it's not about what we're doing in front of others so that way we could receive some accolades. Receive some kind of, oh, notice me, see me. That's what House of Time got caught up in. See me, look what I'm doing, worship me. But no, we have to be able to serve others the same way Yeshua did, quietly, respectably, humbly. Number three is whole life surrender and faithfulness. A servant recognizes that everything belongs to the master and is to be used for his work. Hold time, money, reputation, and plans with open hands, willing to sacrifice comfort or preference when Yeshua's work or people need you. I could say that speaks volumes. Because there's a lot of times when people are in need that we know of that are in need. You might have plans, you might have this, you might have that. But whatever you can contribute, give it. Because anything that we already have and obtained is because of the favor of the Father on our lives. So does it really belong to us? I know Brother Chad mentioned that things are leased. The land is leased to us because it's all the Father's. So as we treat what we have, what we've been given, will be a reflection of if we're being a good and trustworthy servant. But stay steady in assigned duties. Family, work, ministry, even when unnoticed or difficult, remembering that your labor in the Master is not in vain. But number four is humility and dying to self. Being a servant of Yeshua means voluntarily laying down personal rights to please Him and put others first. It says, practice self-denial in small, concrete ways, letting others go first, yielding in dispute. I mean, if that one doesn't shout wisdom, then I don't know what else. I've always said the best way to win an argument is to not argue. Because the reality is, it's not reflective. I mean, imagine if someone from the outside looking in saw some of us arguing and bickering with each other over nonsensical, I mean, there's senseless things. And what impression do they get? And it doesn't justify if no one's around to witness, because the Father witnesses everything. But I know a lot of times if there's two clanging cymbals making noise, that's all they're doing is just making noise into the air. So in humility, a lot of times denying ourselves involves not having to be the person that has to be right all the time. That, even though I seem quiet in nature, it can be a struggle. It can be a struggle for any of us if we're open to admit that. But thankfully, the Father reminds us to be slow to speak and quick to listen. But listening instead of demanding to be heard is another part of that. And as a daily carrying of the cross, refuse to build identity on titles or recognition. And it's also echoing Paul's choice to call himself a servant of Yeshua rather than insisting on his status. And we could see that he does that. It's a brief, short example in Romans 1:1, the introduction. It says, Shaul, a servant of Yeshua Messiah, a called emissary, separated to the good news of Elohim. Which really could speak volumes to us, because we got to make sure that we're always in a position and realize, no matter what your title is, no matter what your calling is, no matter how great, how small it may be seen to anyone or whoever else, that it should always begin with a servant, because that's what we're all called to do, is to serve. Number five is pursuing set-apartness and inner transformation. But servants of Yeshua are obligated not only to do His work, but to reflect His character. To actively put to death sinful desires and habits, resisting temptation and in thought, word, and deed as part of daily spiritual warfare. Aim for a life increasingly marked by love, purity, integrity, and reverence, so that both public ministry and private life line up with the Master you represent. And that one's just a really good reminder of that we need to make sure that we're doing our due diligence, not just to be wearing a mask in front of one another, and then whenever we go back to the home life, we're just acting like as if we've never been immersed onto the Messiah, mm-hmm. that we never crossed over and entered into that covenanted relationship with Him. But all these examples that I was able to look at throughout the week and read over all have one thing in common, and it's the void of selflessness. It's the void of self. It's to make sure that you're not so consumed with yourself that you're able to bring others to the door, so that way they can enter into that sheepfold and enter in and be able to be one with the Master. Because the enemy's job is to keep us so distracted with ourselves and so distracted with everyone else that we overlook or miss the opportunity to be able to introduce someone into the fold. Because ultimately, Yosef being that wonderful example, is spiritually sound and in position, and perfectly represents what Messiah came to do for us. As he introduced his brothers to the one that held the access to the inheritance that they were able to receive for that time frame they needed it, we also should be able to reflect our Messiah and be able to introduce those to the Father, so that way they can have the experience to be able to draw near. Let's make our way to Romans chapter 6. We're going to start with verse 15, but we'll also deal with the other half in a little bit. Well, I know a lot of times the word slave has a negative connotation to it because of history, because of the things that we've been exposed to and the things that we've learned and what people have experienced. But we know that whenever it comes to being a slave unto righteousness, it's the best case scenario, because it's also another word just used for servant. Because a lot of times, and I thought about the negative connotation behind the word slave. It's always attached to whoever the master is. Sure, we learn in history classes of a lot of terrible and awful things that happened to people throughout the ages because they were slaves onto these harsh, cruel masters that punished them the way that they thought they had to. But truly, a slave that is able to be onto the true and one master is to be able to be considered free. And we're going to look deeper into that and us being slaves and servants to the master. But Romans 6:15 says, "What then? Shall we sin because we are not under the Torah, but under favor? Let it not be." And we know how easily that verse can cause a lot of arguments and twisting, but we know that whenever we hear and see the word under, it's speaking directly according to the judgment of authority at hand. And that is dealing with the fact that we've been given favor to be able to operate within the instructions of our master, not to get rid of them. But we all know that very well. But do you not know that to whom you present yourselves servants for obedience, you are servants of the one whom you obey, whether of sin to death or of obedience to righteousness? But thanks to Elohim that you were servants of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of teaching to which you were entrusted. And having been set free from sin, you became servants of righteousness. And we could definitely see that the brothers, just like us, we've all come from a certain background. We all have done things. We've all had these things attached to us. But thankfully, we've been set free to serve under the master, because we were definitely slaves to sin. And I don't know. Maybe I could just speak for myself. But throughout the week, throughout the days, and the different things I deal with, there's time and time again where that old man wants to raise up and remind me of once which I came. But it's up to me to make sure that I'm staying true to my master, and I want to be that sheep that hears his voice, so that way I don't fall back into a life of true bondage, which is lawlessness. I believe it was verse 18, correct? Thank you. And having been set free from sin, you became servants of righteousness. I speak as a man because of the weakness of your flesh. For even as you did present your members as servants of uncleanness and of lawlessness, resulting in lawlessness, so now present your members as servants of righteousness, resulting in set apartness. For when you were servants of sin, you were free from righteousness. What fruit, therefore, were you having then, over which you are now ashamed? For the then thereof is death. But now, having been set free from sin, and having become servants of Elohim, you have your fruit resulting in set apartness, and the end is everlasting life. For the wages of sin is death, but the favorable gift of Elohim is everlasting life in Messiah, Yeshua, our Master. And I think that's an absolute wonderful reading by Paul, because it literally exhorts and exemplifies the opportunity that the brothers are being able to experience now, because they're operating within that favor. They're operating within the righteousness of Elohim. They're presenting their members before Pharaoh and showing that they are the good and trustworthy servants that's going to be able to inherit and enter in to Goshen, to be able to draw near, to be able to thrive in the middle of a very, very, very hard famine. But obedience to our Master allows us to draw near. If we want to be heard by our Master, we must do what our Master says. It's our only means of access to the Father. But I'd put a question here. And it's just a question of reflection. But how many of us can attest to times in our lives, no matter how difficult or simple, when we trusted and obeyed, we came out of it blessed? Very simple reflection. This wasn't one I had to go look and find. This is one that I just meditated upon and thought about. But it's that simple. Because a lot of times we want to make it sound more complicated than what it is. But a lot of what we're potentially dealing with is because we just brought it upon ourselves, because we were too busy operating within self instead of just allowing the Father to operate within us. But every time, whatever it is that we may be going through, if we just allow the Father's hand in that, we end up obtaining the blessings through it, no matter what it may be. You know, throughout this, I was reminded of something that I used to struggle with a lot. Like, and I'm literally giving a testimony at the same time by saying, I refuse to accept any negative thoughts that come my way, coming into service, going to work, dealing with marriage. I'd rather see my wife for who she is, that the Father gave me, than allow the enemy to convince me that she's just trying to give you a hard time, Robert. She's just not understanding you, Robert. Trying to serenade you into a victim's mindset. But instead, realize the purpose of what, and the favor that comes with receiving a wife, that yes, there's a part of them that is supposed to oppose you. What? What's that supposed to mean? Because just like the Father's word opposes us in our sinful nature, it's built into a woman, a wife, I should say, to be able to reflect the character of the husband and help them through their struggles. So we shouldn't be bitter as husbands whenever our wives are giving us some information that's supposed to help develop our character. Now, I say that mindfully, because they're supposed to do that within the Messiah and the standards of his character. So I didn't want to give nobody a little bait bat to go around just, you know, Brother Rob said that you could just, you know, say, yeah, take that, you dumb. Sorry, I had to bring the lollipops into it. That's not what they mean. But there's also, I'm thankful that the Father reminded me of that, because we got to go to Colossians chapter 3. Because this is roles. We spoke about that Wednesday night in Bible study, is roles. And I'm not talking about cinnamon rolls. I'm not talking about sweet rolls. I'm talking about the roles that we get to put on like hats, because we all have a role to play, whether it's a husband, father, employee, minister, so on and so forth, applied across the board. We all got roles to play as servants. But Colossians 3:18. This subtitle, Rules for a Christian Household. It says, wives, subject yourselves to your own husbands as is proper in the Master. which respectfully goes with what I was just saying, that there are certain guidelines that go with that subjection. Because I know usually whenever that word gets brought up, it's a very touchy and hard word for some people to deal with. But to subject, to submit, it's all within the guidelines of the master. As long as they're reflecting that, it'll be much easier for that to take place. Because I grew up in that mindset, and I know this is leaning a lot towards marriage stuff, but that's the beauty of the Father's Word, it all ties together. But I grew up in households where the women had to be extremely submissive to the husbands, no matter what it was about, no matter what was going on. And that only goes so far, because if you don't have the love of Messiah within you, while you're wanting and longing for that authoritative position that we rightfully have, then it's just not going to go forth the way that we expect it. That's why it says as proper in the master. But husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. I could say this week I probably fell just a little bit in that. And I'll tell on myself. But a lot of times, I'm not the one that's right in the discussions we have. But this week, I don't know if I hit the lottery or something's going on in my spirit. I was right like 3 times. So, like I said, I felt a little bit because it don't happen often. It's like the rookie when he gets a touchdown. He's going to dance. But it's a little bit out of character. Over simple things, playing a board game, Catan, and it had certain rules, and I'm pretty good at remembering rules. Not always super great at following them, I'm telling myself, because I could be, you know, for that. But we're overcomers. But it was a simple numeral difference. And we were playing the game, we were going over the rules, explaining the rules, and to win the game, you have to score 8 points, which, technically, I'm going to say it now, it's not wrong, but it wasn't right. So you have to earn a total of 10 points, but you start off with 2 points. I never played a game that just starts you off with 2 points if the goal is 10, but I digress. So a simple little scenario like that, I'll leave the other ones alone for wisdom's sake. But being bitter was like, You think you're right. You think you're always right. You always got to correct me. Well, guess what? You're wrong. That's not pretty. It's a little silly. We laughed about it because I wasn't being a jerk. But in reality, I thought about it. I was like, dude, don't rub it in because I know how your whole fire is. Then the whole next week, I'll be wrong 50 times. So I better calm down. So don't be bitter toward your wives. This is all dealing with roles of servitude because we are supposed to serve one another. That's what the true reflection of a marriage is. Children. Obey your parents in all, for this is well-pleasing to the master. I think that's pretty straightforward and simple enough. And it's a true blessing for children that have parents that are serving the father, because that'll make that process much easier, because sound wisdom should be coming from them whenever it comes to your care. Because at the end of the day, we're all Father Yah's children. So that's a reminder to us to make sure that we're obeying him. The fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. That one speaks volumes because the power of a father's words can really determine the path of a child. That's one verse I really could have benefited from my childhood, but thankfully I have a father that's always been looking out for me, and I ended up still where I'm at now instead of where I was told I would end up. But that's the words of man. The words of the Father mean so much more. But servants, obey your masters according to the flesh in all respects, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing Elohim. Mm-hmm. And I could harp on that all day long, but that's part of the reason why during Bible study, I brought up work. I could also use here. I don't come here to impress y'all, like to dance around and be like, oh, look, I'm vacuuming. Look, you know, like, hey, check out what I did. I helped so-and-so through the door. Like, did y'all see that? No, I come here with the same mindset that I go to work. If it wasn't for what the Father has instilled in me to do things quietly, respectfully, and humbly, then I would still be a mess because that's what I used to be. I used to think like, oh, I got to make sure they, you know, they see this, or, you know, because it comes from a place of insecurity whenever you feel like you always have to be included in every little moment. And then you make every little moment about you instead of about it being a reflection of who the Father is in our lives. And it's something that takes practice. It takes work because the natural man thrives for those things because it's trying to survive. It's like it forgets that its time is limited and is trying to absorb as much as it can. But the spiritual man knows that we have an eternity to give the Father all the glory and all the honor he so deserves. And I could tell you now, it's been an absolute benefit and blessing at my job because I don't have to go to work with an expectation of impressing nobody. I just go to work to do my job and go home. That's something me and my wife, whenever we work together, down the road at the fishing camp, that we would say time and time again because she was in that position of management. I was the Lone Ranger maintenance man that was a jack of all trades, master of none, but YouTube's definitely getting the job done. So yeah, that's the rest of that saying. If y'all didn't know that, I just made it up. But that's something that we used to tell people whenever it came to work over there because there was a lot of drama going around. Just show up, do your job, go home. Whenever you hear the gossip, whenever you hear this, whenever you hear things that catch your ear, don't go towards it. Just do your job, go home. It's a simple principle that if we apply with the fear of Elohim, there's wondrous things that he can do with us. And whatever you do, verse 23, do it heartily, as to the master and not to men, knowing that from the master you shall receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the master Messiah you serve. But he who does wrong shall be repaid for the wrong which he has done. And there is no partiality. Mm-hmm. Mind you, on the topic of servants, I'm always so thankful whenever I get led back to the scripture. But in the process, we're being immersed onto the master. That's what we have signed up for as doorkeepers, as those that want to introduce him to people. But our declaration, this is a note that I put down for myself. Our declaration, our pledge, or having our ear pierced to the door is represented by our immersion onto the master. We know that Abraham was the first what? Hebrew. He was the first Ebri, the one that crossed over. So with that in mind, let's go to Exodus 21. With Hebrew in mind, with servant in mind. It starts off saying laws about slaves. Verse 1. These are the right rulings which you are to set before them. When you buy a Hebrew servant, he serves 6 years, and in the seventh, he goes out free for naught. Now, without going into the Strong's and breaking it all down, because I know we're pretty seasoned and we got that information, we know that Hebrew, in Hebrew, is Ebri. And as broken down further, is Ebar and Eber. Well, Eber, then Ebar. And it deals with one that crosses over a mass of land or a body of water. And we know that's representative of what we have done in the spirit whenever it comes to our physical baptism, physical immersion, is to enter in through the door, by dying to self, because that's what it represents. So that immersion is literally us declaring that we're going to lay down our life and then come up to life. That we die with Messiah and will be raised with Messiah. If he comes in by himself, I'm going back to verse 3. A lot of that was said was also me getting ahead of myself, but I'm realizing time frame. But Exodus 21:3, it says, if he comes in by himself, he goes out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children are her master's. And he goes out by himself. And if the servant truly says, I love my master, my wife, my children, let me not go out free, then his master shall bring him before Elohim, and shall bring him to the door, or to the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. I can't help but point out and realize how good it is that we've been able to experience and walk in the understanding and truth that we've been blessed to be exposed to, and to realize that this crossing over that we've been able to have with the Master has given us the opportunity to make sure that we always have our ear pierced to the door, to the one that calls out to us, so that way we could serve him forever. Because that's what we should be in this for, is serving the Master forever. And we're told to serve one another in the way that we are serving the Master. It's just continual reflection of how important it is for us, like the example we're being given in the Torah with the brothers. They didn't deviate from what Yosef said. They stuck to the instructions. They were presented before Pharaoh and did exactly what was required of them. And that same image and way, because they're Hebrews, that's what they are, because they come from Abraham. They're able to be part of the plan that the Father has established through that covenant, through their service to him, to the dedication to him. And it's a requirement, the same thing that's going to be continuous for us. Because whenever we go before the Father, when we get set before Sovereign, then we have to be that worker that has that skillfulness, that quickness, the readiness to be able to get others out of trouble that they may be in, and show ourselves approved to him as a good and trustworthy servant. But in regards to that immersion, the closing out of this study is in Romans chapter 6, with verse 1 through 14. Which might be a little weird that we started with the middle, worked our way to the end, and then work our way from the top to the middle. But this pertains to what's being said in our service and our immersion, in our position. It says, what then shall we say? Shall we continue in sin to let favor increase? Let it not be. How shall we who died to sin still live in it? Or do you not know that as many of us as were immersed into Messiah, Yeshua, were immersed into his death? We were therefore buried with him through immersion into death, that as Messiah was raised from the dead by the esteem of the Father, so also we should walk in newness of life. The brothers are able to experience newness of life because of the approach that Yehuda was able to exemplify as a good and trustworthy servant. They are able to enter into that opportunity because Yosef answered correctly before every test, before every trial, before every opportunity that he was given to serve. He answered correctly, because Yosef saw it as exactly that. And how many of us can say that whatever position we may be put in, whether it's work-related, ministry-related, family-related, whatever that position may be, whatever your pit might look like, as you might feel that it's a pit, what if it's the Father putting you in a position for an opportunity to show Him that you're good and trustworthy? To handle the situation and the people in your life with the right character. That's how I need to look at it. I'm not telling anybody else what to do. But whenever the text exemplifies this image that's being painted, it's encouraging us to answer correctly. And that's not always the easiest thing to do. Especially whenever we deal with spirits of familiarity. Because that's, to me, from what it sounds like, is one of the hardest spirits to overcome, almost, whenever it comes to dealing directly with family. But guess what? Nothing's too hard for us if we're willing to surrender ourselves and realize that we might be experiencing this pit moment, so that way we can surprise ourselves by answering correctly and just showing the love of the Father. Everything that was mentioned tonight in regards to servants, it's meant to encourage us to do better, to be able to show ourselves approved, for us to strive to be able to be called good and trustworthy servants. Because no matter what it may be, no matter the situation, no matter whether it feels like a famine, sword, pestilence, war, whatever it may be, finances, so on and so forth, what will we allow to separate us from the love of Elohim? Because He loves us. There's nothing that can separate us from His love. Now, I was going to go into Romans chapter 8, but that's just the main gist of that, is the fact that it's all about His love for us and wanting us to realize that no matter what it is that we're going through, we can remain trustworthy if we so see fit. We just have to make sure that, and you know, some of these things, they don't have to be studied out on a scholarly level. They don't have to be broken down to every little Hebrew Strong's number, Greek letter. They don't have to be. All that is just for the magnification of His word and looking into the depth of the culture that He created. Because Hebrew is something that He created later on in creation to enter us into a covenant, so that way we can have that established direct line relationship. But some of these things are the elementary matters. And it feels like that could be our hardest struggle sometimes, is the elementary matters that are just the pure reflection and character of Almighty Yah that was exemplified through Yeshua. Do you not think that Yeshua had moments where He was just like, I mean, he expresses Himself. Like, why do you not understand? Have you not read? Have you not this? Have you not that? And to us, it's like, we hear someone else saying it, or even me saying it right now, it's just like, who does He think He is? But what did the Yeshua say? Because He feels that way about me whenever I act out of line. So this isn't me just fussing at everybody. I'm not even really fussing. I'm just getting fired up. The reality is, we need help. Weekly, daily, every second of the day. Because we're this close from getting ourselves stuck in the mud over a $6 rat with our actions, with our decisions. So we're not thinking clearly, we're not remaining in the boundaries and just listening to the instructions of the one that knows better. But that's why we have to truly, truly exemplify Him through our walk and show that immersion, that effect, that we should be speaking life into one another instead of the opposite. I might have lost myself a little bit. I believe it was in verse 5. For if we have come to be grown together in the likeness of His death, we shall be also of resurrection. Amen. Knowing this, that our old man was impaled. And that's what I was speaking about, the old man. Knowing this, that our old man was impaled with Him, so that the body of sin might be rendered powerless to serve sin no longer. For he who has died has been made right from sin. Amen. And if we died with Messiah, we believe that we also shall live with Him. Amen. Knowing that Messiah, having been raised from the dead, dies no more. Death no longer rules over him. For in that he died to sin once and for all, but in that he lives to Elohim. So you, that's us, also reckon yourselves to be dead indeed to sin, but alive to Elohim in Messiah Yeshua, our Master. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body to obey it and its desires. Because at the end of the day, that's all sin's trying to do is wear us out. That's all sin's trying to do is wear us out. Wear us out till we're dead. But the reality is, we should already see ourselves as been laying down that life, dying to that life, and living with an eternal expectation. That's hard to put together. Internally, eternal expectation set apart from sin. So you also reckon yourselves to be dead indeed to sin, but alive to Elohim and Messiah Yeshua, our Master. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body to obey and its desires. Neither present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to Elohim as being alive from the dead, and your members as the instruments of righteousness. For sin shall not rule over you, for you are not under the law, but under favor. And that's the reality of the brother's situation, right? They're being presented to Pharaoh, someone that is in an exalted position, ruler over the land, that can be a reflection, a type of authority that Jehovah has, because we know that he's the one with all authority. All. When he sits on that throne, it's all his authority. But they had to make sure they were able to present their members with righteousness. The five were chosen for a specific reason. And I believe that there's an amazing reason why the Father kept it the way with just five, not putting those five names. And there's so much incredible information about that. But, you know, and that's the beautiful thing, as we're taught, the most important thing is what the Father left behind is the five. Because sometimes we could probably get real caught up in the who's and the what's, but he's just trying to show that it's his hand over the entire matter. And that when you present yourself before him, that you have to make sure that you are walking in that live, renewed mindset and presenting your members, which is used for what? Work. Because we are to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. We're not just to sit back and cross our arms and do nothing. You know, whenever I get to explain that at work, I'm just like, you know, imagine if we received that brand spanking new garbage truck that runs so well, so nicely. It costs that almost $500,000. Then we just park it because it's so pretty and do nothing with it. I mean, is that really showing that you're thankful for the favor that's been brought to your end of the parish? You just sat there and look at it? I don't know if y'all ever seen that video. But, I think his name's Ed Boon, and he goes around doing pranks, and he acts all goofy, and he just goes, yep, you just look at it, just look at it. That's the approach we take. Then people are going to think we out our effing living mind. He doesn't want us just to look at salvation, he wants us to participate in it, because there was a job that was required of them to do, because they're going to be chief herdsmen, chief shepherds, not just any shepherds. That's how we got to see ourselves, as a set-apart nation, a royal priesthood. You're not just followers of Christ. We are followers of the Most High Son, Yeshua Messiah, that's literally willing and ready to do the good works that he's called us to do with gratitude, with the right mindset, and knowing that, yes, it's an obligation to serve, but it's a privilege and an honor. With that being said, that's where we're going to end our text for tonight. And I'm just thankful for these principles as they come forth in the different ways that the Father deals with me throughout the week. And I pray that, if not all of it, some of this was a blessing to your lives, and just to give us time to reflect and just really look deeper into what it is that the Father is expecting from us. But I love y'all so much, and I'm thankful for each and every one of you. Shabbat Shalom.